Hare Krishna. Instead of the Chaitanya Charitamrita this morning, I thought we'd talk a little bit about Radharani. Rad asked me yesterday. And a few little incidences just to add a few different points of view. So I'm just going to start with it. I may last the whole course. I may not. Let's see what happens. There's a verse. Actually, I'm not sure where it's originally from. Radha Samukha Sam Saktim, Saki Sangam Nivasanim Twamaham Satatam Vande Madhavasraya Vigraha. And the translation is, O spiritual master, I continually offer my obeisances unto you. We're always in the presence of Srimati Radharani and very much devoted to her. You always reside in the association of her confidants, the gopis, and you are the abode of loving devotion to Krishna. So that describes the spiritual master as the representative of Srimati Radharani. There's also, in other places, it's mentioned that the spiritual master is part of the Guru Tattva, and as such, that's headed up by Balaram. So the idea is that only the most confidential associates of Krishna can give us access to Krishna himself. Balaram, of course, is Krishna, just the color's different, that's all. And also, slight difference in the mood. Balaram is like the elder brother of Krishna, so he's always a bit protective towards him, and so he doesn't allow anybody to come near Krishna unless they're qualified. Radharani, of course, is Krishna's pleasure potency. The purpose for serving Krishna is to give him pleasure, not us. If we have any spark of self-interest, Radharani makes sure that we don't get near Krishna. Yeah, only when we're fully surrendered, then she allows us access, and we can join, as it says there, we can become associated with the confidants of Srimati Radharani. So there's a couple of incidents just where I, Prabhupada emphasized the point about worship of the spiritual master as being the main duty of a disciple. In 1976, Prabhupada had arrived back in Bombay in August 15th after his last world tour. And then from there he went down to Hyderabad to open the temple. I think that was on the 16th evening. So when we arrived there, it was very nice. There was a whole party of South Indian Brahmins led by this gentleman called Sampat Kumar Bhattacharya. Very nice man. They're all in the middle age. They'd come across our devotees when they were preaching. Yashodhanandan Swami and Achyutananda had been touring South India. They were actually very expert in quoting Shastra. They met with a lot of religious leaders and impressed upon them the work that Prabhupada was doing. And of course, they were very appreciative that Westerners were taking up Vaishnav culture. So when they made the decision to build a temple in Hyderabad, Prabhupada specifically mentioned that we should try to get Sampat Kumar Bhattacharya to come there and do all the pujas with his men and install the deities. That way people would accept it as being very authorized, and it would also make a better link, strengthen our ties with other Vaishnav groups. The year before, of course, they'd opened the Vrindavan temple, and they'd had a group of Brahmins from Vrindavan do all the pujas, but Prabhupada was not very satisfied with that, and there is a purport where he mentions that as well, that we could have done just as good a job just by chanting Hare Krishna, but because the local people wouldn't accept, therefore we had to hire the local Brahmins. Anyway, their dealings were not very satisfactory, but this Sampat Kumar Bhattacharya was a very nice man, genuinely appreciative of Srila Prabhupada. and his disciples. So they were engaged to do the pujas. So we arrived there, I think, on the 16th evening. And right there at the airport, as we got off the plane, they allowed Sampat Kumar and his men and our men to come all the way up to the aeroplane as Prabhupada was getting off. In those days, airport security was almost non-existent, which was nice. And so Prabhupada was greeted with nice kirtan. They were showering flowers on him. They were chanting Vedic hymns to glorify him. And from the airport, we drove to the temple. So when we got to the temple, there was a Jagyashtala, a place where they were doing all the pujas. They sat Srila Prabhupada down. They worshipped him very nicely for about half an hour. They put some pavitra around his neck, a bracelet on his wrist, and a kushagrash ring on his finger. I still have those items. Then afterwards, we were expecting now we'll go into the temple, but Mahamsa Swami, who was the leader there, he explained to Prabhupada that actually your quarters are not finished, so we want you to stay with a life member. So there's one life member, Hari Prasad Badruka. His family were just about to give 560 acres of land in a trust with ISKCON, and he was apparently a very nice man. So we had to drive nearly an hour to get to his place. It was about 11 o'clock at night, I think, by the time we got there. Then Prabhupada had to meet the family and do a little preaching. By the time everybody took rest, it was about 1 o'clock. Or by the time Prabhupada took rest, it was 1. In fact, I don't think Prabhupada even took rest. He went straight into his translation work. Then at 5 o'clock in the morning, Prabhupada called us into his room. Thank you. Harikesh was the secretary. And Prabhupada told him that actually this is not good. We should be staying at the temple. It's just about to open. I think he was anxious that, it'd be done properly. And Mahamsa was a nice man. Prabhupada said that his main asset was that he never complains about anyone and nobody ever complains about him. But that was from a personal characteristic point of view. As a manager, he was not really on top of things that much. So Prabhupada was a bit anxious and he said, it's not good that we have to come and stay in somebody else's house. What's that? It's not required. Not required. Not required. Thank you. So early in the morning, then Prabhupada told us, pack up. We're going to go to the temple, whether it's ready or not. So we drove back there. I think Mahamsa was caught by surprise a little bit. And when we arrived there, Prabhupada wanted to go straight up to his quarters. So when we got there, it was like a construction site. It was filthy. There was half an inch of, cement dust all over the place. The windows and doors were not fitted. But Prabhupada said, all right, clean it. So he stood there as we ran around with brooms. We swept the whole place out, washed it down. There was an asana with some big orange orange cloth colored bolsters. So they put that down with a table for Prabhupada to sit at, and there was a small bed. So after half an hour or an hour, he finally kind of moved in. And then everybody went about their business. Prabhupada was sitting on this asana and he banged the bolsters. He said, this is like rocks. He wasn't very happy. And the way that the temple was designed was that Mahamsa got this idea because the temple was very high. So Prabhupada's room, if you can imagine it, this is the temple room. Prabhupada's room was like up here if you were in the temple room. It opened onto the temple room itself. And there was a small balcony. The idea that Prabhupada would be able to come out, sit on the balcony, gaze down into the temple room, everybody would get his darshan. The only problem was that they hadn't put the door in. So there was just a curtain hanging there. And when I went to sweep up, I saw that they'd swept all the dirt from the main room onto the balcony and then hidden it with this curtain hanging down. Anyway, so Prabhupada noticed all these things. He didn't say much at the time, but when I went in to see him in the afternoon, he made a very telling comment, because Mahamsa's excuse for not getting Prabhupada's quarters finished on time was that they were so busy trying to make arrangements, you know, for the deity room to be ready for the installation the following day, that, you know, it was a question of priorities, really, that they had to get ready. They were installing Jagannath deities this high. They already had Radha Madan and Mohan, who was biggest deities in ISKCON at that time. They were 6 feet tall. And they were installing Gaunatai, and they were also 6 feet tall. And Prabhupada had gone down and he'd inspected the deity room. He'd seen the deities. One thing I remember is when he saw Gaunatai's hands, they were painted pink. And if you've ever bought deities from Jaipur, you'll see that they're very fond of using this kind of hot pink color. And Prabhupada told him, he said, repaint them, they should be reddish, not pink. So he had a look around. Anyway, so then later on he was up in his room and he made this comment. He said, actually, he said, the spiritual master's quarters should be ready before the deities. It was a very, very significant comment. And so anyway, we you know, had a very successful opening. I remember about midnight on the eve of Janmashtami, there was a loud kirtan coming from the temple room. I just finished giving Prabhupada his evening massage. This kirtan was going on in the temple below, and it was very exuberant. So I kind of pulled back the curtain between separating Prabhupada's room from the temple room. And I looked down and I saw that our devotees and about half a dozen of these South Indian brahmanas were just bringing Lord Jagannath and then Balaram and Subhadra into the temple room. So they were walking them across the floor. And as they were walking the deities across the floor, everybody was jumping up and down and very blissful. And then they bring them to the front balustrades where the deity room was and then haul them up and put them inside. And then afterwards they had this very ecstatic kirtan. Yasodhanand, there's some pictures actually. Yasodhanand was leaping up in the air. He was famous for leaping about 4 feet in the air. And they got so fired up that the South Indian Brahmins, who were, you know, kind of very staid or stately kind of persons, they also got swept up in the kirtan. So they began by, you know, bobbing up and down and putting their hands up and down. Then they started leaping up in the air as well. You can imagine they're about 50, 60 years old, big bellies, these big, huge seekers, big, you know, golden ornaments from their ears and bangles and everything. And they just got swept up with the kirtan. It was really amazing. And there was one fellow there with a big beard. And as I was watching, I suddenly, he froze. And he had his hand like this. And then he started rocking his head back and forth and baring his teeth like this. And he's got his hand out and he's clawing the air as if he's got a claw. And then after about a minute, he just suddenly went bang and collapsed on the floor. Then all of his compatriots came and, you know, they were chanting and, you know, trying to revive him. After a minute, then he got up and then he just started dancing really ecstatically. It turned out later on, I found out that he was a pujari for Lord Nisringadev. So he'd gotten into the Nisringa bath and he was swept up with the kirtan. Anyway, so the whole thing was very nice. We had a very successful installation. The chief minister came and a lot of other ministers came. Prabhupada had some important meetings with the minister for endowments. He met with seven of the main cabinet ministers of Andhra Pradesh, preached to them about Varnashram Dharma and like that. So it was, you know, advertised in the newspapers. So it's very, very nice. So Prabhupada stayed for a few days longer just to make sure that everything, you know, after the installation would go smoothly. Because he had his Vyasa Pooja there the next day. I remember what Prabhupada did was he got Harry Kesh. He just received the Vyasa Pooja book, a new Vyasa Pooja book. So Prabhupada had Harry Kesh read out the name of every single temple in the Vyasa Pooja book. Just the name, nothing more. Just to impress upon the visitors and the local people that ISKCON was spreading like anything all over the world and was being accepted all over the world. So they were very impressed with that. So then a day or 2 days later, all the pujas had been completed. It was time for Sampat Bhattacharya to, Kumar Bhattacharya to leave. So they came to see Prabhupada in his room. And there was some nice exchange. Then he pulled out of his pocket a Shalagram Shila, about this big, and he put it on Prabhupada's desk. He said, "This, I'm giving this Shalagram Shila to you." So in those days in ISKCON, practically no temples had Shalagram Shilas. I mean, Prabhupada had not allowed the worship of Shalagram Shila until he was satisfied there were qualified people to look after them. And again, there's a purport in one of his books where he mentions that at the time of writing, we have not yet introduced it, but we will do shortly when we are satisfied that there's some qualified devotees to look after them. So that's not to be taken cheaply. Yeah, Govardhan Shilas, Shalagram Shilas, very, very important worship. When the devotees had first gone to Govardhan with Srila Prabhupada in 1970 or 71, the first wave of ISKCON devotees went to India. They'd heard about the importance of Govardhan, so one or two of the devotees had collected some rocks from Govardhan Hill. That was reported back to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada ordered them to immediately go back to Govardhan Hill and put the rocks back where they got them from. So he wasn't ready for it at that time. Anyway, by 76 he was thinking about it, and I think maybe New Vrindavan may have started Shalagram worship, and possibly Mayapur also, but nobody else. So this Shalagram Shila is sitting on Prabhupada's desk. After they'd all gone, Prabhupada called in Pradyumna. So Pradyumna, of course, is Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor. Even Prabhupada used to call him Pandit Mahashay. So he was very learned. Self-taught, actually. I saw him a year or two ago, and I'd always been curious about where he learned Sanskrit. And because he started helping Prabhupada with Sanskrit editing in about 1969, just after he joined. So I thought he must have, you know, come from some scholarly background, maybe was learning at university as Ridayananda Maharaj had done, and then he was employing that now in Prabhupada's service. But he said, no, he said, I just became attracted to it and I taught myself. So, and he was good enough that, you know, he was editing Prabhupada's books. So Prabhupada called him in. The year before, he'd been down in South India. He was attracted to South Indian style worship. And of course in India, in the South, there's still a little spiritual culture. Not so much in the North anymore, but they've retained their traditions in the South. So he was living in Urupi. And Prabhupada had called him to come and see him. And then he had ordered him, now you travel with me. So from April of 1976, Pradyumna joined Prabhupada's party and remained on it up until Prabhupada's disappearance. So Prabhupada actually, again, made another comment to me about Pradyumna. He said, I saved him, otherwise he would have become a smarter Brahmin. But he liked the ritualistic side of things. So after Sampat Kumar gave this Shalagram Shila, then Prabhupada called in Pradyumna. He pointed to the Shila. He said, now we've got this Shalagram Shila. He said, you can begin the worship. So you keep him with you. He said, just simple, not complicated. He said, like my father, wherever he went, he had a silk pouch around his neck and he was keeping Shalagram Shila. And every day, morning or evening, whatever, but every day he would do worship of Shalagram with tulsi leaves and Ganga Jal. So he said, that's all that's required. You keep it very simple. You can do this worship every day. You've got the inclination. He said, and if the husband, and Arundhati was there as well, his wife. She was doing the typing of Prabhupada's Bhagavatam dictations. So he said, if the husband is not able to do it, then the wife can do. So between the two of you, you worship this Shalagram Shila. So Pradyumna went out, he bought a little asana, silver asana, for his Shalagram Shila. And then a few days later, it was time to leave, and we went up to Delhi, where we'd just gotten a new rented building at Lajpat Naga 3. And we were going to spend Radhasthami there. So the day that we arrived was, I think, the day before Radhasthami. And as soon as we entered, the devotees were there. There was a group of young Indian boys that had joined Lokanath Maharaj's traveling Sankirtan party. Atmatatma was one of those. They were all still bhaktas. It was a tiny little temple room, jammed up. So Prabhupada had darshan of Radhapata Sarati. Then he got on the Vyasasan, ready for to receive Guru Puja. So everybody's coming forward. They're offering the flowers. The Guru Puja's going on. Prabhupada's looking. Then he called me over. So I leaned over to see what he wanted. He said, where's Pradyumna? I said, I don't know. He said, go and find him. So I looked around the building. Pradyumna had gone upstairs, and he was just sitting down getting ready to worship his Shalagram Shila. So, you know, this was like his new thing. So I went back down, and I told Srila Prabhupada that Pradyumna's just doing his puja. Prabhupada got really angry. Right on the Vyasasan, everything, everybody's looking. Kirtan's going on. Prabhupada got really angry. He said, you go and tell the nonsense. First Guru Puja, then other puja. He said, go and tell the nonsense. So that was it. I went up. I said, Prabhupada's really angry with you. You better come down, stop what you're doing and come. So that was the point that was made, that the worship of the Guru is more important than the worship of Krishna. Because it's only by the grace of the Guru, as this verse says, that we can approach Krishna and be accepted. We have to get a recommendation from Radharani. We have to get a recommendation from Balaram. And without that, then we have no access to the spiritual world. So that's a couple of little incidences, just to emphasize that point. And then a few months later, we went to Bhubaneswar. This was in January of 1977. Prabhupada had been to the Kumbh Mela, and from there we went to Calcutta, and from there we went down to Bhubaneswar to do the foundation stone ceremony of the temple in Bhubaneswar. Gaur-Govinda Maharaj was there. So on February the 2nd, I think it was, it was Lord Nityananda's appearance day. So we had a nice festival. We did a groundbreaking ceremony in the morning and installed, I think, Sheshanaga. Then there was a program for the local people, and then in the evening there was some speaking program from the stage. So in Prabhupada's class for Lord Nityananda's appearance day, he emphasized that Lord Nityananda is Balaram. Yeah, just as Krishna descends as Lord Chaitanya, then the same Balaram descends as Lord Nityananda. And the same thing, he said that he's Guru Tattva. Balaram, Guru Tattva, Lord Nityananda is Guru Tattva. So you can only approach Krishna through Lord Nityananda. You can only approach Lord Chaitanya through Lord Nityananda. If you don't worship Lord Nityananda, you can't get Lord Chaitanya. Because that's also there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, since that was supposed to be the topic today. But the reason why Krishnadas Kaviraj left home was because he had a festival. Some of his friends came. His own brother was there. And Krishnadas Kaviraj was a big follower of Lord Nityananda. He had full faith in him. But he said his brother only had a very slight faith in Lord Nityananda. He was worshipping Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme, but he only had slight faith in Lord Nityananda. And as a result of that, Krishnadas Kaviraj got in an argument with him. And then at the night time, he was feeling very disturbed that his brother was not accepting the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. So in his disturbance, he became a bit depressed. And Lord Nityananda appeared before him, brilliantly dressed, glowing and effulgent with his flute. And he told him, he said, "Now you can attain all good fortune if you go immediately to Vrindavan." So he woke up. He didn't tell anybody else. He just immediately left the house as soon as he woke up. He walked all the way to Vrindavan. And then, of course, when he got to Vrindavan, then he wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's very important to recognize this link that we have between from Radharani, from Lord Nityananda, in order to get access to Krishna, in order to validate the service that we're doing to Krishna. It needs that stamp of approval from those great personalities. One thing that always puzzled me was that on the one hand, we're told you can't get Krishna's mercy except through Radharani. And then you're also told that you can't get Krishna's mercy except through Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda is Balaram, but you never put Balaram and Radharani on the same altar. It's not allowed because brother and sister-in-law. So the etiquette is, you'll see in many Gaudiya Math temples, they have Radha Krishna deities and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even in our Calcutta temple, it's like that. Just Lord Chaitanya, but not Lord Balaram or Lord Nityananda. You have to keep them separate. So if the two of them are separate, who do you go to? If you want to get the mercy of Krishna, you want to be accepted by Krishna, then who do you go to? Do you go to Lord Nityananda or do you go to Radharani? If they're not even on the same altar together, it seems like it's, you know, a bit of a, what is that word, dichotomy? It's a split. I could never figure it out. But of course, the resolution to that seeming problem is that Lord Nityananda, he's worshipping Lord Chaitanya. So Balaram is worshipping Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Chaitanya is Radha and Krishna combined. So by going through Lord Nityananda to Lord Chaitanya, then automatically Radharani's there in the form of Lord Chaitanya. So if we get accepted or a recommendation from Lord Nityananda, then we get accepted by Radharani, who is combined with Krishna in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and everything becomes resolved very nicely. So that's a couple of things about the Guru Tattva, where I'm just going to read a couple of things that I've got here that I've been preparing. So everybody wants to spread the mercy of Radharani, but of course Radharani's position is very confidential. It's not very easy to understand. When we worship Radha Krishna, we do not worship Radha Krishna. We're actually worshiping Lakshmi Narayan. And Prabhupada mentions this in letters, in purports to his books, that the worship that we're doing is not Radha Krishna worship, it is Lakshmi Narayan worship. It's done in awe and reverence and great opulence. Jai Shishu Radha Gokul Ananda. But, of course, there is the fact of Vrindavan Leela. There is the fact that that is the highest state of being, to be involved in the Vrindavan Leelas. And in fact, this is mentioned by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. This is from an article from 1934. This was printed in an edition of the Gaudiya. In the Gaudiya Math under Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, they were very prolific publishers. So they had a daily newspaper, the Nadia Prakash, that was going out for years and years, every single day. There was a weekly, which I think was the Gaudiya. It was either a weekly or a fortnightly. Then there was the Sajantoshini, which was originally in Bengali. That had been started by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in around about the 1880s. And that was revived or continued by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So that was in Bengali, but they made a significant change to that in 1927 when they transformed it into an English periodical, English language. So this was all in preparation for the expectation that Lord Chaitanya's movement was going to spread beyond the borders of India. They were actively preparing for it. So this was one way that they did it. And they started producing books also in English. Anyway, so the Gaudiya was coming out either four times a month or twice a month. This article is very significant because he speaks about Srimati Radharani. So he says, all these days we have not spoken about Leela. He was very strict about his disciples not jumping ahead and thinking themselves to be in ecstatic love of Godhead when they've still got material inclination. So this is always something that our acharyas have guarded against. But at the same time, there is such confidential literature and activities. So how do you fit the two together? You're supposed to act on the Sadhana Bhakti platform. You can't imitate the Raghunuga platform, but the Raghunuga platform exists. So we have to know about it. So all these days, we have not spoken about Leela. Why? Because this is our most confidential asset. This is our only sadhya, or perfection. But one should not make a mistake of thinking that anatta nivritti, or overcoming impediments such as lust and greed, is the prayojana, or the goal in life. One thinking like this will never enter into artha pravritti, acquiring one's actual need. For this reason, I will begin speaking about Astakaliya Leela. So two things is there, anatta nivritti and artha nivritti. Artha pravritti. So there's one thing about losing all the bad habits, but it's quite another thing about acquiring the qualification. So I know that you are not ready to hear it. That's us. I know you are not ready to hear it, Astakaliya Leela. But we should know such a transcendental ideal exists within the realm of devotion. This is why anatta nivritti is essential. After the realm of anatta nivritti is artha pravritti, or pure conjugal service to Radha and Krishna. This is transcendental reality. If we do not know this transcendental realm, then all of our efforts may end in nirvisheshavad, or impersonalism. So we have to know about the highest levels of devotion, even if we're not on that level, because if we don't hear about that, then we'll be diverted into becoming impersonalist. So do not let your day pass in trying for anatta nivritti. Artha pravritti is also necessary. So don't just work on getting rid of the unwanted things. That's nice, you get purified. But you have to bring in the positive. One of the first analogies that I ever read that Prabhupada gave was the one about the glass with the half filled with ink. So Prabhupada was explaining that if you have a glass filled with ink, you may pour out the ink and empty the glass, but if the ink, if it remains in an inky atmosphere, then again the ink will come back in. So when you pour out the ink, you have to fill the glass with milk. Then when it's filled with milk, then there's no possibility of the ink returning back in. So this is the same kind of idea, that we can work for anatta nivritti, getting rid of all the unwanted, you know, attributes and characteristics. But unless we adopt this pravritti, artha pravritti, then we won't know what the next step is. And then we are, you know, it's a dangerous position. So when artha pravritti is present, then anatta nivritti becomes unimportant. So once you've attained that positive side of things, the negative stuff all falls away automatically. And then artha pravritti becomes prominent. So it's an important comment there. And then he goes on, he says, those who have chanted Hari Nam for 15 or 20 years should know such things. Now this is 1934. 20 years before that was 1914. The Gaudiya Mat was begun 1918, although Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did have some following even before he opened the Gaudiya Mat up officially. So he's saying some people who have been chanting for 15 or 20 years, then they should know such things. The beginners need not hear these topics or they will misunderstand. So this is not for everybody, but for those who are qualified. These topics are for certain audiences, not for all. Also, it is said, Apana Bhajana Kata Nakahibe Jata Jata. One should not reveal one's bhajan to others. If we disregard this instruction of our previous acharyas, then there may be a permanent fall from the realm of devotional service. So we're protected by the disciplic succession. Yeah, we can't just approach willy-nilly, chant anything we like, fake some, you know, temporary ecstatic symptoms. One has to follow very strictly the sadhana that's given by the Guru Parampara. When we perfect in that, then we become qualified for this pravritti, this additional spiritual state of existence. So one way of attaining that, this was discussed in about 1974. Ramachwara Prabhu, he had made a controversial statement, which I'll mention in a minute, about the nature of book distribution and how that was actually on this higher level of devotional service. So some people were doubting that. So there's a couple of comments that Prabhupada made then about book distribution as being artha pravritti, not just anatta nivritti, but artha pravritti. So Prabhupada, in this purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, he says the word kriyasu, meaning by manual labor or by work, is important in this verse. One should engage in practical service to the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, all our activities are concentrated upon distributing Krishna literature. All of our activities are concentrated on the distribution of Krishna literature. You should take this very seriously. This is very important. One may approach any person and induce him to read Krishna literature so that in the future he may also become a devotee. Such activities are recommended in this verse. Kriyasu yas twach charanaravindayo. Such activities will always remind the devotees of the Lord's lotus feet. By fully concentrating on distributing books for Krishna, one is fully absorbed in Krishna, and this is samadhi. So it's an interesting comment. Those who are distributing books, or if you're not distributing books, you can help distribute books. But that's always been, you know, what do you call that? The fine point of the edge, right? The groundbreaker. Selling Prabhupada's books. That's always been the chief focus of this movement. So anyway, as I said, this became a little controversial when Rameshwara, who was the BBT trustee, made the comment and compared the distribution of books to the, you know, higher state of Radharani and her relationship with Krishna. So this is a letter from Paris sent on June the 9th, 1974, to somebody called Nandalal. I'm not sure that was Nandalal or Nandulal. But anyway, Prabhupada says, please accept my blessings. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letter of May the 23rd, just received here in Paris. It's good news that you are finding engagement in distributing my books all day in Hawaii. So there's no question of taking any other engagement. Distribution of my books is the highest kind of preaching, and thus the best engagement. So take it as Krishna's mercy that you have gone to Hawaii and engaged there full time, as it is a very important place. The explanation given by Rameshwara that Sankirtan is Lord Chaitanya's Leela, which compares to the gopis trying to engage others in Krishna's service, is the correct understanding. So Prabhupada was very clear about that. Radharani's business... Excuse me, sometimes I've got to stand up. Radharani's service to Krishna is not that she likes to serve Krishna herself. I mean, that's the highest form of service. But even higher than that is when she introduces other devotees, new devotees, and tells Krishna, this is a very nice devotee. This devotee has been worshipping you so nicely, you kindly accept him. When you get your introduction, that's the perfection. So when we go out distributing books, Prabhupada's transcendental literature, which Prabhupada said, Krishna appears on every page of the Bhagavatam. So when we distribute Prabhupada's books, we're acting as agents for Srimati Radharani. That introduction is being made. And then if a person gets a book and reads it very seriously, then they may become a devotee. And then they enter into the transcendental leela. As Prabhupada said, we'll have another ISKCON in the spiritual world. Yeah, we should take that seriously. I just read an article, I'm just trying to remember who wrote it, about that point. The significance that, I think it Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, he just wrote a really amazing article about the Mayapur temple and the meaning of it. And I think he mentions there this point. So ISKCON is a transcendental affair. It's not a mundane organization. It's not a mundane religion. It's got nothing to do, in one sense, with being in the mode of goodness even. Yeah, that was one point that Ravindra was making, is that we have our four regulative principles. And we know if you break the principles, then, of course, you're likely to lose the association of devotees. It's very important. But often we take the following the four regulative principles as a kind of a part of our social structure. You know, it's practice. It's to purify us and or keep us out of trouble. But the principle of following the four regulative principles is a principle of knowledge. It's a requirement that if you want to understand transcendental literature, Urdhvam Gach Chanti Sattva Star, if you are in Sattva Gun, yeah, the mode of goodness, then you can rise up. In the mode of goodness, you can actually understand the transcendental knowledge. So it's very important. There's a principle of developing knowledge of the Supreme Lord that you must follow the four regulative principles. It's not just some social convention, but it's an essential item for the development of real knowledge. And if we're not placed in the mode of goodness, we cannot develop real knowledge of Krishna. Yeah, we'll be shrouded with that. So in that way, then, anyway, our transcendental ISKCON movement, 50 years old this year, it's meant to imbibe in people this knowledge, pure love of Godhead. Yeah, it's an educational movement. Prabhupada always said that. This is an educational movement. And the principle of education is that you have to be fit to receive the information that's being given. Very, very important. It's not just that you go there and you study the books and you write some essay and, oh, now you know it. That's mundane education. You just learn it by rote. This kind of education, this is education also. But the principle of this education is that you must be purified enough to be able to understand it. Yeah, you can't just learn some formulas and reel them off, as people do. Again, when we were in Bhubaneswar at the groundbreaking ceremony, foundation stone ceremony on Nityananda Prabhu's appearance day, there was one speaker that came from Jagannath Puri, Sadashiva Rutt. So on the 25th and 26th of January, Prabhupada had paid a visit to Jagannath Puri. Although he had told us that he didn't want to go because they wouldn't let his disciples into the main temple. But when Gagamuni and others found that there was some land for sale in Jagannath Puri, then Prabhupada agreed, all right, let's go and visit, see what's there. We can build our own temple. So we went there, and we stayed one day. We were supposed to return in the evening. But what happened was that the word went out that Prabhupada is in Puri. So this gentleman came in the afternoon, Sadashiva Rutt, and he was one of the pujaris in the main temple. But he was not quite like the rest of them. He was actually a little favorable. So he invited Prabhupada to a program that he was having the next day where they were inaugurating a new version, a rear version of the Bhagavatam. I don't know who was the writer, but anyway, they were having a pandal, and they obviously thought if we can get the guru of the Western devotees to come, that will attract some attention. Obviously, he had his motivations, but he was a nice man. As soon as he came in Prabhupada's room, Prabhupada asked him to chant the Jagannath Ashtakam, which he did, and we recorded it. He knew the whole thing. Very nice. And so Prabhupada agreed, all right, tomorrow we'll come. So we stayed overnight in Jagannath Puri. Next morning, we had a nice leela with Prabhupada. I gave him his massage a little early, about 11 o'clock. And then after he finished, we were staying in a place called the Tourist Bungalow Number 1. It's got a different name nowadays, but we had a room on the first floor, right? Here you have ground and first, so first floor. And the veranda overlooked the sea, so the ocean is just like 50 meters away. So Prabhupada had finished his massage, and then normally we'd go and, you know, bathe out from brass buckets, but he looked across at the ocean. He said, well, what do you think? Meaning, shall we go down to the ocean? And so we all were desperately thinking about, you know, favorable things to, you know, shore up his resolve. Yes, it's very good for the nerves, you know, the movement of the waves, and it's very healthy. And so Prabhupada didn't take much persuasion. He just smiled. He said, all right, let's go. So he had his gamsha and his towel wrapped round. We walked down to the seafront. Prabhupada stepped out of his towel, came to the edge of the water. Because in Puri, the waves are a little strong sometimes. But where we were, there was about 20 of our devotees swimming in the ocean. Guru Kripa Maharaj had come there with his Namhata party from Japan. So they were out there in the waves every morning, body surfing. So when Prabhupada came out, the word went out, Prabhupada's bathing in the ocean. So we brought Prabhupada to the edge. He was standing just so that when the waves came in, they would come up to his knee or mid-thigh. And then when the waves went out, then they would reveal his feet again in the sand, because the sand was shifting. So I was holding Prabhupada with one hand, holding him by his arm just to steady him. And then as the waves came in, Prabhupada bent down and scooped some up and splashed a bit of seawater on his body to wash off the oil from the massage, because it was not very effective, I mean, just splashing. But he was doing it. So then I thought, I better help. So I was holding with one hand, and I started scooping water up and rubbing it on Prabhupada's shoulders and chest. So then Guru Kripa, Satsrup was there, all the boys from the Namhata were there, Bhagwat was there. So they saw this is a chance. So they also started scooping water up and then just gently throwing it on Prabhupada. And when they saw that Prabhupada was laughing and, you know, not stopping them, then they got very enthusiastic. Started splashing like anything. I think they started chanting the Brahma Samhita prayers. They were all expert. Guru Kripa was into mantra chanting. He could chant several chapters of Bhagavad Gita nonstop. So they all knew the Brahma Samhita, so they're chanting away. Then I poured some water on Prabhupada's head. Then Prabhupada bent down, he scooped some up, and he put it in his mouth and swilled his mouth out with the seawater. So when he spat it out, Guru Kripa, he was the only one, that was quick enough. His hands shot out, he caught this water right out of Prabhupada's mouth, and then he drank the lot. Anyway, so it was a nice pastime. It didn't last long, about 10 minutes, but Prabhupada had his transcendental abhishek on the seashore in Jagannath Puri. Anyway, so then later on in the afternoon, it was time to go to this program. This man was there, Sadashiva Rat. They had like a small, you know, very simple pandal. About 20 people could sit on it. And it was only maybe, you know, 3 feet above the ground. So when Prabhupada came with his disciples, all our men were sitting on the sand in front. It was in a big sandy area. There was a Gaudiya mat just nearby. There were some pandas and some pujaris from the main temple, Jagannath temple. They were sitting on the stage. As soon as Prabhupada got out of his car, then immediately they stopped the proceedings. Sadashiva Rat brought Prabhupada onto the stage. And then asked him to speak. So he showed him this book that was being inaugurated. This is what you have to speak on. So Prabhupada picked it up, he looked at it, he put it down. And then he gave this very nice talk about why are they disallowing his disciples from going in the Jagannath Puri temple. He explained, he said that his name is Jagannath. He said he's not Purinath or Arisanath, he's Jagannath. So if the people of the Jagat are coming to see him, why are you stopping? So it was a little controversial and confrontational, but that was Prabhupada. He was taking advantage. They wanted to take advantage of him. He took advantage of them. So one or two men I saw as Prabhupada was speaking, they got up and walked off. They didn't want to hear it, but Prabhupada didn't care. At the end of it, when he finished, then I was sitting kind of, if this is where Prabhupada was, I was sitting right where you are. So Prabhupada looked at me and said, "So?" Meaning, shall we go? We've finished. And he began to get up. And then Sadashiva Rat, he said, "Oh, the book, you have to inaugurate the book." Prabhupada hadn't said a word about the book, actually, so he picked it up. He said, "Well, they say this is the Bhagwat of such and such a person, so today it is inaugurated." And he put it down, that was it. Anyway, in reciprocation, Sadashiva Rat, he was invited to our temple groundbreaking ceremony on Nityananda's appearance day. So when he came, you know, he was allowed to speak. We were all on the stage. Prabhupada was kind of on the left there. Guru Kripa and a few of his men were sitting on the stage at the back. We'd had a kirtan. Sadashiva Rat got up and he started speaking. And he spoke and he spoke and he spoke. And he's going on and on and on. It was all in Aryan, but he was profusely, you know, chanting slokas and citing shastras for this and that and the other. So after 20, 25 minutes, Guru Kripa decided that the man had been speaking for long enough. But so he's sitting on the just behind him. So he takes out his japa mala and he starts chanting, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare." I mean, deliberately very loud. And then he looked over as he's doing it to see how Prabhupada was going to react. Prabhupada just sat there, looking straight ahead, you know, deliberately ignoring what Guru Kripa was doing. In other words, it was a kind of like a tacit approval. So then the rest of the Namhata boys, they got out their japamala, and they're all chanting, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna," like this. So then after about 5 minutes, Sadashiva Rat got the hint. He realized, okay, this is time to stop. So at the end of it, then we all got down from the pandal. We went back into Prabhupada's room. Guru Kripa comes in. Prabhupada's sitting behind his desk. Guru Kripa comes in. He's got this very impish grin on his face, like he'd just done some mischief. And he sat down. So Prabhupada was laughing. Guru Kripa asked him, he said, "Was that the etiquette, Srila Prabhupada?" Meaning interrupting. And Prabhupada said, "Well," he said, "we should have let him speak," but he said, he spoke of so many things, he said, but there was no conclusion. So he said, anyway, he is after a householder after all. So that was his conclusion. He knew lots of things, but no conclusion. Yeah, he's spouting out all these slokas. But Prabhupada's saying, well, he is a householder. Means that's how these men earn a living. They're professional priests. They know all the slokas, they know all the rituals, and they get some remuneration. That's how they support themselves and their families. But the real point is missing, you know, to bring people to the point of surrender, pure love of Godhead. So that was Prabhupada's intention, was not just, you know, that we learn things by rote, but that we should actually absorb the message, we should understand the knowledge, and we should act on it, and that will raise us up on the spiritual platform. So in that way then, you know, this idea of these four regulative principles, this is not just social convention, this is essential for developing real transcendental knowledge. If you don't follow the four regulative principles, you're blocked. Urdhvam gacchanti satvastar. You can only go up if you are in the mode of goodness. Yeah, that's the platform of enlightenment. Maje Tishtati Rajasai. If you're in Rajagun, like many of these men are, you're learning, learning, learning. But you stay on the same platform. You don't really make any advancement. And of course, the other, Tamagun, then you're finished. So this is very essential. For ISKCON as a movement which is transmitting transcendental information to introduce the conditioned souls to Srimati Radharani and get her recommendation to be introduced to Krishna. That's our process. And we see that because Prabhupada was only on that platform, therefore whatever he spoke was immediately effective. You know, we just had, a few weeks ago, they had Shyamasunda, Malati, Mukunda Maharaj, Bhakti Churu Maharaj, a few others, at the Sydney Opera House. So they booked one of the halls there. They had two programs. It was very successful. So those devotees were there, of course, right at the very beginning. So when you read how the devotees first met Prabhupada in 26 Second Avenue, and then again in San Francisco in January of 67, it's amazing. I mean, what happens? Prabhupada is talking straight philosophy that they've never heard anything about before. He's talking about, you know, these different characters, Lord Chaitanya and Krishna and Radharani and this and that. And these people are joining. Somehow or another, that infusion of knowledge had a magical effect on them. It cut through all the modes of nature, moved their hearts and enlightened them and brought them immediately to the transcendental platform within weeks. Now, we've just had Janmashtami. Prabhupada had his first initiation of Western disciples on Janmashtami in 1966. Some of them had just come around about a week before or a couple of weeks before. Prabhupada just initiated them. And then he told them, by the way, there's these four regulative principles you have to follow. Some of them didn't even know that. But because they had this faith, immediate, you know, arising of faith in their hearts just from hearing Prabhupada speak, they didn't really know that much about what he was saying. But it had this immediate transformational effect because Prabhupada was coming from the completely pure platform. So that knowledge, transmission of knowledge, this movement's always been on the basis of knowledge. Yeah, and not we weren't attracted because, oh, we like to wear a sari, or we like to wear a dhoti, or we thought it was a far out hairstyle, you know, to shave your head and have a little ponytail or put some, you know, paint on your face or whatever. That might have been a, you know, a motivation for some people or something different. But something different means then after a short while you'll leave. But ISKCON was developed on the platform of knowledge. Gyan, and then Vigyan also. That's the solid platform. And therefore, Prabhupada was saying, he had no expectation. He knew what he was delivering. He had no expectation that anybody would accept it. He told me, he said, when I arrived in New York, I thought, well, I'll start speaking, I'll mention these four principles, and they'll say, thank you very much, now go home. He said, they'll just tell me to go home. So I was very surprised when people actually started following them. So, because Prabhupada's transcendental surprise is one thing. But anyway, that's the point, is that if we want to keep this movement alive, then we have to concentrate on what Prabhupada said is our most important service to Radharani, to Lord Nityananda, which is distribution of these books, because that is the link. Yeah, that's the gift that we're giving people. That's the opportunity that we're giving for them to come and join in, you know, with this transcendental, eternal leela of the Lord. So, I know Vishwanbhas very keen on book distribution. It's very good. So we should keep that foremost in our hearts. This is the real meaning of Radhasthami. Yeah, that we're giving that entranceway or access to Krishna. We like to worship Radhi, Radhi, Radhi and all these things. But the real meaning of worshipping Radharani is this introductory process is going on. Here's the conditioned souls, they're lost, they're bewildered, they're suffering. And here's the transcendental realm. So give them the opportunity, give them the chance to make a choice. If they make the right choice, if they get association with serious devotees, they'll be transformed. Just like Prabhupada, just by his personal presence, these people just dropped everything. Their entire lives up till that point finished. I mean, literally within days or within weeks, they just walked away from all their friends. They walked away from everything that they knew, the culture that they'd been brought up in, their family and all these other things, and just joined up with Prabhupada. Brahmananda, later on in 76, we were on a morning walk in Mayapur. He said, Prabhupada, he said, if we'd have known what you were really about, we would never have joined. It was a compliment that Prabhupada was so expert. You know, he somehow or another convinced people to give up everything that they ever had, you know, for this Krishna consciousness movement. And all he was offering, he said, I'm just offering four no's. Yeah, don't do this, don't eat meat, don't eat, you know, have illicit sex, don't take intoxication. He said, who will accept? He said, sometimes when you tell people, we have these four no's, they're, oh, it's like death. How will we live? That was the report in 1934 when Bon Maharaj and his two compatriots, they met with Lord Zetland. Lord Zetland, he had been the governor of West Bengal. Oh, not West Bengal at that time, it was Bengal. There was no partition. So he had been the governor. So he was familiar with Gaudiya Vaishnava practices, at least. He's seen it amongst the people. So they got an interview with him when they came to London. And at one point, Lord Zetland asked them, now, can you make me a Brahmin? So they said, oh, yes. Oh, how? Well, stop eating meat, stop your illicit sex, give up your intoxicants, don't gamble. Oh, impossible. That was his reaction. Absolutely impossible. So they were not successful. Maybe there's other reasons why they weren't so successful. But when Prabhupada came and he said the same things, I mean, all right, let's do it. So many people started coming. You know, in 10 years, he went from zero to 108 temples. I was with Prabhupada on the first Ratha Yatra in New York in 1976. That was the place where everything had begun. The week before, we'd been in Washington, D.C. We'd had a birthday celebration, 10 years of ISKCON. Now we're celebrating 50 years. So in those days, 10 years of ISKCON. There was a little speech. Prabhupada spoke very nicely about how this movement is not 10 years old. It's not 500 years old. It's 5,000 or even beyond 5,000 years old. This is what Krishna spoke to Arjuna. So from that perspective, all right, we've reached 10 years. That's something. And similarly with this perspective now, we've reached 50 years. It sounds like a lot. It's not. It's just the very beginning. We're lucky that some of us have been around now for 40 or 50 years. But, you know, when we get to the point when we're celebrating 100 years, let's hope some of you are still around. I think some of you are young enough, you'll probably make it to the 100th celebration. But those celebrations, 10 years, 50 years, 100 years, that's just the way that we're marking time. Yeah, these anniversaries are important in relation to our bodies, because our bodies only last 100 years at maximum, or less, much less. But the real thing is that, now what was I going to say? I just lost my track. Oh, anniversaries. In the spiritual world, it's mentioned there, Kataganam, Nacham, Gamanam, Api, Vamsi, Priya, Saki. Kataganam, the kata, the talk. Ganam, it's all song. Everything's so melodious. There's no dissonance. Yeah, people screeching and yelling and, you know, berating each other. No, everything in the spiritual world, kataganam, it's a song. Kataganam nacham. Everything is a dance, gamanam. Every walk, every movement is like a transcendental dance. And the flute, Bamsi Priyasaki, is the dearmost friend of all the living beings, because through Krishna's flute, then he calls all his friends, all his gopis, all his gopas, all his cows. When he plays his flute, it has different meanings for different residents. For the cowherd boys, that's the signal. Let's go and join Krishna. Yeah, when the cows hear the flute, they know Krishna's coming to herd us up. He's going to milk us. So they get his association. And the gopis, when they hear Krishna's flute, they're thinking, oh, now Krishna's coming back from the fields. He's been away all day with his friends. We don't get a chance to be with him in Govardhan or Jamuna. But now we can hear his flute. That's the signal that he's coming. So they get very, very enlivened. And then, of course, at night time, he has his transcendental leelas with the gopis. So Bamsi Priya Sakhi, this is the spiritual world. Every movement is a dance. Every word is a song. And this transcendental vibration of Krishna's flute, which is the source of all creation, this entire material universe, you look and see all the Milky Way and billions of galaxies and stars. It's all flowing from the sound vibration of Krishna's flute. That's the creation. So this is what we want. We have to enter into Krishna's Leela. And we do that through getting the grace of Radharani, getting the grace of Lord Nityananda, following in disciplic succession very strictly. We can become elevated and enlightened just by following these four regulative principles and chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So I guess that's my... I'm done for today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimati Radharani ki jai.